KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bridging the Future, an evening with 2015 Youth Poet Laureate Contest winners, Friday, October 23rd from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Zoomtopia in Portland. This event will feature performances by the poets Alexis Cannard and Saki Edwards, as well as Tyler White and Baki from the What Do You Want to Do crew and Spit Right Youth Poet Project, and a conversation facilitated by Mike Crenshaw between the artists and the audience reflecting the connections between art, culture, politics, community, and cross-generational solidarity. Again, that's Bridging the Future, an evening with 2015 Youth Poet Laureate Contest winners, Friday, October 23rd from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Zoomtopia, 810 Southeast Belmont Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And it is 10 a.m. on KBOO Portland. As you heard, we will be having Chris Andre with Air Cascadia momentarily. At 10:15, Locus Focus host Barbara Bernstein talks with Meg Turville Heitz of the University of Wisconsin at Madison about why there is a disconnect between scientists who tout GMO safety and a growing majority of consumers who believe that GMOs are dangerous. At 11 on Health Watch, host Dr. David Naiman speaks with Joe and Terry Graydon about the People's Pharmacy Home Remedies. And at 11:30, we speak with a representative of Cultivate Oregon about their campaign to stop the DARC Act, which would preempt labeling of genetically engineered food, undo state initiatives requiring labeling, and nullify any previously passed GMO bans. So you'll want to stay tuned. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thank you, members, for your support. If you would like to join or renew, just go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Monday, October 19th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest is Aaron Corvin. He is an extraordinary investigative reporter with the Columbian. Ever since I first came across his work, I've been checking, following, and always trying to find whatever he's been looking into. And lately it has, of course, been the Port of Longview proposed terminal. Before we speak with Aaron, just a couple of issues to take up. First, a few headlines that I know you want to hear about. The issue of breaching four giant dams on the Snake River is up again. And there are various suggestions of ways to help endangered salmon runs. It's been around for a long time. So in that sense, this is not news. Critics of the dams say, of course, that the vast numbers of salmon and steelhead that are killed, the fact that, and that up against whatever power is generated by the dams, that there's no comparison. And they're right. On the other hand, I have heard tribal elders say that white colonial presence on the land has done enough damage already, and that they should just leave things alone and stay away from the rivers. Federal scientists using new technologies have come up with an idea. It's a cold water climate shield that would be five of the western states, essentially that's Cascadia, would support viable populations of native species of fish. It would do a bit towards counteracting the effects of warming waters. Well, we know how to fix that. It's to limit the number of people on the land. The carrying capacity of the land has already been breached time and again, and to limit consumption. That said, of course, we'll have to wait and see whether people are able to control their own population and their own levels of consumption. And Montreal, the Mohawk tribe is fighting the mayor who wants to spew millions of gallons of untreated sewage into tribal waters. And Mazen Kamsia, he's a professor and director of the Palestine Museum of Natural History, has written another essay that I do commend your attention to. We're not able to get Mazen on the line this morning, but his reflections on the events that are taking place in his homeland are heartbreaking. That all of that said, and there's a great deal more to say. It seems too that number two generator at Fukushima, there was experienced a total 100% meltdown, something that people don't like to talk about. But yay, behold, it's right there in front of us all the time, whether we can see it or not. And German human rights group filed suit against what they call the CIA Queen of Torture. More on that. And if I can get this posted up on the KBOO website, I will do that for you if you like. But right now we are very, very privileged to welcome Erin Corvin, an investigative reporter with The Columbian, is joining us again to talk a little bit more about proposed Longview Terminal. Good morning, Erin. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, this came out, I imagine that the response to this piece that you just put out is going to be somewhat staggering. I was staggered by the piece. I was very glad to see it. I don't know. I've not been able to go over it in detail, but I understand the Washington State Attorney General, Ann Isco, has some issues. The analysis by Isco is a As you point out, as you say, is a central component of the state's regulatory review of this project. And ESCO wonders whether Vancouver Energy, the partnership of applicants at Cicero and Savage, have seriously thought about alternatives. Can you talk a little bit about how this changes the direction of the debate over the terminal? Because it does indeed it sort of changes the entire playing field, it would seem.
Absolutely. This is this memo provides a, which I should say was disclosed to the Columbian under a statutory request for public records. The state told us that it was inadvertently disclosed to us, but in any case, it was disclosed. And what it provides is to the public is an unprecedented glimpse or pulling back of the curtain, if you will, on a complicated process. And ESCO's memo shows that the preliminary draft environmental impact statement that the company submitted on what would be the nation's largest oil transfer terminal here at the Port of Vancouver is deeply flawed for a number of reasons. She points out that the company's analysis is lacking in terms of the impacts of climate change. She pushes back on the company's assertion that this terminal would aid the nation's energy independence. She calls out concerns about public safety, a lack of full discussion about public safety and hazards. And there are numerous other concerns that she raises. And as you say, I do believe this is having a ripple effect. This type of document, a confidential memo, the disclosure of it, again, really pulls back the curtain for the public to understand the state's concerns. And if anything, it does show that the state is giving this project a hard look.
Well, who is this fellow, Jeff Hymas? Is apparently he's speaking on for the Savage Company, saying that it would be inappropriate to comment on a memo we haven't seen. You would think that he, of all people, everything about this seems so so flawed. They seem to have been caught on the back foot with this, not expecting to have this revealed, and don't know quite how to respond. I would imagine the response will be with even more lockdown secrecy. Then the companies are involved in this thing seem you know, in for the long haul, and there is money, and then there's of course law and investigative reporting, and that's what the contest is. Again, some of the people here, the other person I wonder about that you do write about is Sharon Wallace. She's on this evaluation council. How much power does this council have, and what have they done? What role do they play?
Excellent questions. And so the evaluation council in this case is quite powerful. It in the state of Washington. Energy facilities of a certain size, scope, scale, are reviewed by this council. And what the Evaluation Council's authority is to really kind of run proposed energy projects through an environmental impact analysis, through what amounts to a judicial trial, where the pros and cons are hashed out before an administrative law judge, and public comment and public input are part of the process. And then ultimately what we expect from the Evaluation Council is a recommendation to the governor, Washington Governor Jay Inslee, to recommend approval or denial. So ultimately this will go to the desk of the governor for a final decision. And again, it's clear through ESCO's memo that the state has deep concerns about what the companies have turned in. And, before this memo was disclosed to us, the companies had told us that they felt their analysis was adequate, and that they had spent a substantial time, putting this together in support of their application. And really what this memo reveals is that the state has not taken it that way. They see it quite differently. And so it begs the question of, going forward, how this Assistant State Attorney General's concerns are being addressed. And we do expect the Evaluation Council to release its draft environmental impact statement by November at this point. And so it's going to be interesting to see going forward what that document looks like, especially in light of the ESCO memo.
Well, the manager of the council, Stephen Posner, we've heard from him in the past on occasion, and his claims that the quote that you have here is that he's been working for several months to address the concerns raised by ESCO. It seems like when they talk about addressing concerns, that means getting around. The translation of that would be getting around existing laws and the concerns of public and publicly elected officials. It just seems that the Evaluation Council is there. Their role in this whole thing is to find ways around objections and ways to sort of soothe the public concern. How is the evaluation the council put together? How neutral, how objective are the people on the council? Because it looks so much like they're in the pocket of the companies.
Great questions. The council is made up of officials who are appointed to it from state departments, various state departments. So you'll have representatives from the Department of Ecology, for example, Fish and Wildlife, Department of Commerce. So you do have, it is a regulatory body, but it has been cast or understood by some to be a fairly neutral body, a body that is focused on best practices, best available science. However, there is absolutely a political component to this, a strong political component to this, a strong push and pull, if you will, between people who are, in this case, concerned about the oil terminal. The public has been pressing openly the governor to deny this project, to petition him. On the other side, the companies have sent letters to the Evaluation Council complaining about how long it's taking to review this project. And so really the Evaluation Council is kind of sandwiched, if you will, between these two competing voices. And, I can say this much, they are not rushing this. They appear to be trying to vet this. But I think the rubber meets the road when you see this draft impact statement come out. And what I hope with my story is one of the things the public, I hope, will be able to do is compare notes, essentially. You see, can you see, if you can see what ESCO's concerns are, and they are a central component of this, are they being addressed? We're really going to be able to compare and contrast in detail whether her concerns have been addressed.
That's all the time that we have. I hate to cut you off right there, but I do commend our listeners' attention to this piece in the Columbia. And it is by our guest today, Erin Corvin, investigative reporter, and amazing work. Go back and read the stuff from June. It's important to know that, too. This has been, of course, Air Cascadia for Monday, October 19th, 2015. Kate Welch engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Kate. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Spent most of my life in prison, chasing a dream called justice.
Measure 11, Oregon's one-strike-you're-out law, was passed by Oregonians in 1994. It mandates long-term prison sentences and tries 15-year-olds as adults. Tune into Prison Pipeline on October 19th to hear criminal defense attorney Jesse William Barton discuss ideas for reforming Measure 11, including invalidating its companion Measure 10. That's Prison Pipeline, October 19th at 6:30 p.m.
Won't somebody please set me free?